with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am coming to you from my remote location here in one of my mini libraries surrounded by hundreds of books. And I am, of course, thinking about you and hoping that all of you are being safe and being careful out there and that you take this time. As I say at the beginning, this is for all of you who want to know the story behind a book. And also, perhaps you will be inspired. And since you have time, this right now you can't say that you don't have time. You have time to sit down and start writing. Because it's always so exciting to become an author. And so today I am so thrilled. I have, you know, I always talk to you about how I love medical books. And, of course, Robin Cook was a guest on my program. And so today I am so thrilled that I think we have the new challenger to Robin Cook. And he was just, an absolute wonderful author. With medical mysteries, but this one that I'm going to talk about today, I think is a winner, and it's by John Bishop, MD, and it's called Act of Murder, and it is a Doc Brady mystery. When they put that there, a Doc Brady mystery, I think we're going to have a lot more, and I hope so. So I'm so thrilled to welcome to the program Dr. Bishop, if he's there. Ed, did Dr. Bishop get on yet?
Hello?
Dr. Bishop, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, well, I want to tell you that I think this book is terrific.
Well, that's very nice of you. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, many, many reasons. First, I was living in Texas, in Houston at that time of the setting of the book, which is set in 1994. We lived in Houston. My boys were born there, and I know the area that you have your setting of the book very well, River Oaks. I lived on Pebble Beach Golf Course, 17th hole.
You're kidding me. That's where you live now?
No, that's where I lived when we were, that's in the 90s when we were in Texas, and we lived there for 10 years. And so there I was. I'm sure you've done that golf course.
Yes, ma'am.
And so you walked by my house many, many times. The 17th hole was a really nice location. And wow. So it's so much fun when I read a book where I know all the streets that you're writing about, and like Westheimer and all of these streets that, you know, that I know so well, and you have a wonderful, wonderful way of describing and putting a reader in a place.
Well, you're very kind. It's what a coincidence that you were in Houston. That's amazing.
It is, and of course, let's talk about, you know, I love medical mysteries. I've always loved medical mysteries because when I was young, I was a candy striper, so I worked in a hospital for a long time. I loved it, so, and always, you know, even then, I was reading Robin Cook and always looking for a mystery, to tell you the truth. So this book is so terrific, and I love your character. It's just, you've just come out with a wonderful, wonderful character. So tell us about Jim Bob Brady and how you, well, I think he must be based on you, right?
Well, I'm sure everybody you write about has some real person involved, but I think I tried to take all the best qualities that I had and then embellish it and then come up with Jim Bob Brady, because I'm certainly no saint. But he, you know, he's a fine fellow. He's always out there trying to right some wrong, take care of his patients, do the right thing. And I guess he's not a superhero, but yet he's a guy that's he's always in the forefront trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, he's a real good guy. That's how you can describe it. And then, you have, in addition, his wife, which she's, you know, sometimes in these kind of medical mysteries, they don't sort of flesh out the family And in this case, you've done a wonderful job with Mary Louise and with their son, JJ.
Well, thank you. I've been reading medical mysteries, as you have, my whole life. And for some reason, I just felt the need to bring in the family, let everybody get to know the family, sort of a family unit, as opposed to just a single man accomplishing these things. And so it worked out.
It does, because that's exactly what I said, that it's so often in medical mysteries, it's the hero doctor, you know, whether it be a man or a woman, but you never really get this, either the sense of place, other than a hospital, and a sense of the family. And in your case, you've done both. You it's like a tour guide of Houston and all the way down to Galveston, which, you know, of course I took that trip so many times. And you really bring Houston to life, which for readers, I think, and particularly in this time where people can't go anywhere and do anything, to have a book that really describes a place so that you feel like you're there, I think you've done a terrific job.
Well, thank you. I especially wanted everybody to know about how good the food was in Houston. So at least now when I go back and look, I'm salivating because I can't have anything that I've read about in the book because I'm stuck at home.
I know. I was reading about this. I say, oh boy, this guy likes to eat. That was one of the most enjoyable parts of the book, and that's why I'm saying that you created such a wonderful atmosphere with the locations, the restaurants, and of course, just I loved the way you introduced the sort of catalyst to the story. You came in sort of very low and slow with Jim Bob just sitting there enjoying himself on the porch. And so you don't, like, in many cases, I think so many authors would have just slammed you right from the beginning with the incident, with the hit-and-run accident. But the way you sort of blend, just... you know, moved us slowly in. I thought, this is nice. Texas slow trot.
Yeah,
it was good.
Texas slow, right?
That's it. I loved it.
Well, you're very kind. Where do you live now?
I'm in Florida, in Clearwater.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was, but we were there for a long time, and we loved living up there in that area. Downtown, like River Oaks in that area, the traffic was too terrible. So, but it was fun to live out there by 1960, and in those days it was calmer. I'm sure Houston people do not realize until they get there how spread out Houston is.
Well, you know, back in the day, 1960 area, that wasn't that populated back in the 90s.
And I know, that's why I loved it. We were in the country.
Yeah, I can see.
So, you know, tell us how I know that you've gotten some great reviews already. And as I said, what I love about this book is that the mystery is great, the thriller part is great. So I don't know, you've got your spiel. What do you want to tell us about the story without giving too much away? Because it is a very, very good thriller.
Yeah, the act of murder is... I don't know what to... I basically started out with a premise of the death of the child, and then I kind of morphed that into this osteogenesis imperfecta medical problem that the boy had, and then through a series of other circumstances, I discovered another child with osteogenesis imperfecta that had some similarities to the first child, and I just kind of wove it from there.
And then it leads you on a real quest for answers, and the reader is going along with you, and while they're going along with you and going to some good restaurants to eat, they get to really, I think, sometimes when a character comes to life, as you have brought Jim Bob, it's just, he becomes a friend. You want to know more about him, and I assume that there are going to be more books.
Yes, there are. As a matter of fact, I've two more completed.
Uh-huh.
Act of Deception comes out in June 10, and Act of Revenge comes out September 10.
Okay. Well, see, I said that I have the next Robin Cook here. you know, Robin Cook has only sold, what, 300 million books or something like that?
Yeah. Unbelievable. And so was Michael Crichton, who's one of my favorites as well.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I think where you stand out, really, where you really stand out is the characters. You have created characters that, you know, so often in the medical mystery line, you don't actually ever remember the names. You remember the story, you remember the mystery, but you don't remember the actual characters. And so what you've done is something really pretty spectacular here. It's that you've created a character that when people read it, and I will tell you, it's always wonderful. It's always wonderful when you come out with a name that people can remember. And Jim Bob is somebody that they're going to remember. If they read this book today, you know, 6 months from now or whenever the next book, and you say it's about, you know, Jim Bob Brady, people are going to remember that. And that right there, you have created a fan base. Just from the name alone, and then because of the family that you built around them, I think you've got a real winner here.
Well, very kind. So, someone told me that they may forget the story, but they won't forget Jim Bob Brady, and they can't wait to see what happens to Jim Bob Brady next. And to me, that was important to have a character memory throughout the whole and throughout all the books, and each one is called something Act of This or Act of That. But Jim Bob Brady is always in the forefront.
Well, this is your first book?
Yes, ma'am.
I love talking to a Texan. There's nothing. It's so nice. You know, this is remarkable, really. As I said, when I read so many books, I get 8 to 10 books a week. And when one stands out like this, when I love a character, and as whoever told you this, they want to know more. I want to know more. I knew immediately that Jim Bob is going to be in my life forever because I'm going to be reading Jim Bob books for years. And of course, the whole thing here nowadays with streaming video and all of that. Once you have like 10 or 12 books under your belt, you're going to, you know, get picked up, and it's wonderful, and you deserve it because very few authors can do all that you have done. The thriller part is excellent, and then the just bringing us to the location, making us feel for a little while, and right now people need to feel for a little while someplace other than where they are, you know, stuck in their houses.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So there they can get into, and if they've never been to Houston, they'll learn a lot about it. Anybody who's been to Houston will really love your descriptions. Now, you know, tell me something. Tell my listeners a little bit about you, because I've always found that my listeners, if they know more about an author, they take a bigger interest in reading their books. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up in Waco, Texas, and went to college there at Baylor, and then ended up going to med school in Houston at the Baylor Hospitals there. And so I became an orthopedic surgeon. So I decided to write about what I knew. I mean, I made this character as an orthopedic surgeon because I knew all the ins and outs of orthopedic surgery, as opposed to making him an immunologist or an allergist or some other kind of medical doctor, of which I wasn't as familiar. And so I basically had a very busy practice, and I was an academic orthopedic surgeon there in Houston, in that I trained residents and fellows and had to write articles and make presentations at national meetings and the like. And after 13 or 14 years of that, I got burned out on the busyness. So I concentrated on my practice and gave up the teaching part, and then I found out I had something unusual that I had never had. It's called free time. so so I got this writing bug, and I'm not sure exactly where it came from, but I got the writing bug and started writing back there in the 90s.
Well, I think, and, you know, it's going to work out for you because, as I said, once you get this writing bug, it stays with you, and you've got talent. That's you know, we could put you anywhere up against any author, and you are just. I love the layout of the book. I love everything about it. I love how it's been laid out. I love the little. The list, everything about this book is done right.
You're very kind, my lady.
Well, you know, my goal here is in doing these programs and doing all of this is always to encourage people that if they have been dreaming about writing, they should start writing because you don't know until you get those words on paper. So it must have been a pretty magical feeling when you wrote that first chapter, because right there you must have realized. Did you realize how good you are?
No. No, I just started writing, and I told someone the other day that it's like somebody turned on a faucet and it wouldn't turn off. And I sat there and I sat there and I sat there, and the wife and the kids would come up and say, "Are you okay? You alive up here?" I was writing at the beach house in Galveston up on the little cubbyhole on the second floor. And I kept writing. And I have to just tell you, I don't know how long it took me to write it, but I didn't quit writing until it was done. It was just like something came from nowhere. It was a very strange feeling.
It is. That's why I named my program Joy on Paper, because it's suddenly... these things can come to you. The story sometimes can come to in your head, fully blown. I mean, you see the story. You know what you want to get on paper, and then when you start doing it, and it works out. And in your case, it certainly has worked out so beautifully. It's thrilling.
Well, that's very, very nice of you. I tell you one thing I learned about writing is I would get up and I would go up there and I would start writing, and it seemed like, not gobbledygook, but it just seemed like I'm writing something that doesn't really pertain to the story. But yet the more you write, these ideas come to you that you say, well, that can pertain to this like this, or this A can be B, C can be D. And suddenly the stuff that you thought was meaningless is an important part of the story. So once you start writing, don't throw anything away. That's what I learned.
That's true, because you never know. And just little things, can you write them down, and they can come back, and suddenly you can see that sort of a whole page or a whole chapter out of one little idea. And so that's why I, particularly at this time when people are listening, I want to tell them that you should just try, because, wow, I can't guarantee everybody's going to be as good here as John Bishop, but wow, you are amazing.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I do,
and I like the thing where Jim Bowes says that he went into orthopedics because he didn't like to deal with dead people. So
death and dying.
Death and dying.
Yeah, now everybody's dying all around it.
Yeah.
And there continues to be death.
Yes. Well, you know, with all of your years' experience, how are things in Houston?
Well, we are not actually in Houston much now. We've kind of moved out to the Hill Country.
Ah, you know, that's a good place to be at this time.
It is. It's it's very calm out here. There's not many people, and so the virus hasn't really been an issue. So everybody's still being careful, but Houston has been a mess, as you know, because of the virus and because of the traffic and the people and the giant masses of people everywhere. And my old office is just about shut down now because they're not doing any elective surgery right now. So it's been a mess.
I know, and I have so many friends still in Houston. My boys were born in Northwest Hospital up there in 1960, and of course they had we did a lot of things in Houston and have friends there, friends living in River Oaks, as a matter of fact. And so we have so many worries. And I think, you know, one of the things really we need to do at this time is to have some distractions. And people, I'm telling you, everybody, this book is so good. You will just love it. It's called The Act of Murder, and it's the first of a Doc Brady mystery series, and I predict it's going to be one of those mystery series that goes on for the next 25 years. And we're going to see like a book a year at least, so you'll be on Joy on Paper many times.
Well, I appreciate that. Very kind.
Okay, now do you have a website you want people to go to, or how do people see you?
Yes, ma'am. It's called johnbishopauthor.com.
Okay, johnbishopauthor.com. Everybody get this book, An Act of Murder. It's a wonderful, wonderful read, beautifully laid out. It's the right length, too. I'm going to tell you it's the right length. Sometimes, and this happens with medical mysteries sometimes, let's just say they go overboard with details.
Yeah.
And for me, I love it because having been, you know, working as a candy striper and later on in a laboratory, I love details. But for the average person, I think you have enough, just the right amount of serious medical information for us. But mostly, again, it's a character-driven book. And that's the most important because we really will care about the characters and about Jim Bob, who is going to become a new best friend for many, many people.
I hope so.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It has been a joy to talk to you, Dr. Bishop. And if you have a book coming out in June, make sure that I get an advance copy, and you'll be right back here talking to my listeners, and hopefully they will all be out of quarantine by then.
I hope so. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. All right. Well, he is so nice. He is so nice. And I tell you this, it's funny, you know, I get these books, and sometimes you just, there's something about this book. First of all, the layout. Not all books are just laid out so that they're really comfortable. And he has checklists in here, and he has emails, and he has different things happening in the book. Everything is laid out beautifully. For all of you authors out there, if you are looking for an example of a well-laid-out book, just from a technical point of view, I would get this book. It's comfortable. It's a comfortable read from chapter to chapter. All of the breaks are just really nice. And I've had some books lately where everything is sort of crowded together. I barely have a moment to blink my eyes between chapters. And in this case, somebody has done a terrific job for him. And it's a really good read. And as I said, once you get to know Jim Bob, the doctor, orthopedist from Houston, it's somebody you'll think that you've known him forever and that you would love to sit down and talk to him. So please get this book. And now we're going to... Again, I just want to tell everyone, be strong, keep washing your hands, keep this distancing. It'd be nice if we were all in the Hill Country, because there's no people around. I love the Hill Country in Texas. You can go for miles and miles, and there are no people at all. But anyway, Ed's going to take it away to commercial, and then when I come back, I'm going to be talking to a very fascinating author and about food. And everybody's thinking about food right now. Okay, take it away, Ed.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With the Z, and I am back, and I'm going to be talking in a little while to a wonderful author. I spoke to him a while back, and I ruined his name, I'm glad he's coming back so I can apologize to him. And it's called, his book is called The Blue Zones Kitchen, so I'll have him back in a few minutes. You know, it's so funny, I'm here in this remote location surrounded by books, and I've been thinking a lot about the books that really make a difference to me, and so many of the authors who, you know, I just love the authors that I talk to all the time. I would like to recommend, if you're looking for a series to jump into, C.J. Box. You know, he is one of the nicest guys. I've had a chance to meet him, and I've had a chance to talk to him. He's a great guy. I think maybe next week I'm going to replay his one of my favorite interviews of all time, actually, with him, because he's just a wonderful person. And so he's up there back in Wyoming and that area, so I know that he's safe, which makes me happy. But his books are, his series is one of those series that you really, again, if you start at the beginning, you just go through it. Look, they're saying what we have, 2 weeks of this, maybe 3 weeks of this. I believe in immersive education. When I was homeschooling my boys, we immersed in a subject. I had no idea what I was doing, to tell you the truth, when I started homeschooling. It was the last thing I ever expected to do. But when I started homeschooling, and I really didn't have, in those days, I didn't have resources like they do now, which probably was the best thing, because I just said to my son, my older son, I said, you know, what do you want to study today? What should we do? And most of our studying turned out to be just whatever interested us. If we were interested, we would just travel around the house in all sorts of mysteries. So here, now, I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper again, because last time he was here, I was a little, I don't know, I didn't pronounce his name right. And so I'm so happy that today I have Dan Buettner, and I pronounced it right.
I love it anyway.
Okay, well, you know, I felt so bad last time. I think I spent 5 minutes apologizing for not pronouncing your name right, but I think I did it right this time, okay?
I'm just happy to be here.
Okay. Well, you know, it's so funny. When I talked to you before, and of course, the book is you know, Blue Zones Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live for 100 Years. And I think everybody out there, this is a strange time. This is a really strange time, and people are like, what is going on? And so that's why I thought this book is fascinating. One, it's a beautiful book. It's just one of these books that is so beautiful to look at. But then the idea of that you traveled and that you learned all of this. So many people now are stuck. Everybody seems is stuck in the house. They can't go anywhere. They can't do anything. I thought perhaps some of the stuff you could talk about would perhaps be food that we could actually cook at this present time. Most of us actually stocked up on stuff like rice and beans because we didn't know how long this was going to happen. And then I think my listeners would love to hear more about your travels.
Sure. Well, you know, where there's crisis, there's opportunity. And though we have to stay home, there's an opportunity to relearn the art of cooking, something our grandparents knew very well and we've largely forgotten as the standard American diet has washed over the food environment here and really made us sick. We're probably living six fewer years than we could be if we ate a Blue Zone diet as opposed to a standard American diet. But the idea of Blue Zone really born about 15 years ago. I got an assignment for National Geographic to find the statistically longest lived areas around the world. I dubbed them Blue Zones. And then recruited a team of scientists to help me distill out the common denominators. And when it comes, you know, the general DNA of Blue Zones is, or the general core idea is that if you want to live longer, don't try to change your behaviors because that won't last. If you want to live longer, change your environment so you're nudged into moving more, eating a little less, socializing with people, and knowing and living your sense of purpose. But for Blue Zone Kitchen, I decided to focus just on food because for most people, most Americans, the runway for a new, healthier lifestyle is through their mouth. So I really wanted to take a scientific approach to the diets of longevity around the world. I took National Geographic's best photographer, David McLean, and we spent 2 years going back to these areas where people are living the longest. And learning from the culinary geniuses of these villages, the grandmothers who have been cooking the same way for 400 or 500 years, not only capture the science of the ingredients, why these ingredients are helping people live longest, but more to the point and to the usability of this book, the actual best recipes that enable Americans to take these secrets and put them to work in their kitchen.
Well, one of the things when I prepared for this, my son is a biomedical engineer, and he is up in Madison, and he was, of course, watching this thing happening. And he told me right away, he said, stock up on things, and among the things he explained I should stock up on were things like rice, dried peas, because our family loves pea soup, so if you have dried peas, you can make pea soup, and pea soup can, you know, last a week. So we did. So I bought a lot of things like that that I actually don't normally buy, and so it's nice that I have this stuff, wild rice, for example, and things like that. So tell us what, you know, we're limited now, although people can still do some shopping. Tell us about perhaps some of the easiest things that we can cook right now with our resources.
Okay, so ironically, the true longevity foods of the world are peasant foods, and they're pantry staples, so they're ideal for a pandemic. So if you look at all five Blue Zones, Okinawa, Japan, Nicoya, Costa Rica, Sardinia, Italy, Ikaria, Greece, the Seventh-day Adventists, The same five foods occur over and over, and they are whole grains, beans, corns, rice, corn, wheat, and rice, greens, which you can get very cheaply frozen, spinach or kale, tubers, potatoes, especially sweet potatoes, nuts, again, very shelf-stable, a handful of those will give you 2 extra years of life expectancy if you're eating them every day, and then the longevity all-star, the most important food, is beans. A cup of beans a day will add about 4 years to your life expectancy. And what the Blue Zones Kitchen does is it harnesses the genius of these grandmas and how to combine those foods with the right herbs and spices and and oil and the cooking techniques, which takes these very simple, cheap, unbelievably healthy probiotic food things and turns them into feasts. And most of these recipes, they take less than 20 minutes of your time. If you have a crock pot or an Instapot, and they'll produce a beautiful meal for 10 people for under a dollar serving. And if you don't have 10 people in your home, they freeze wonderfully. It's really the happy irony of this pandemic is it gives us a chance to take these simple peasant foods and learn how to make them taste delicious. So we will eat them for years or decades and avoid the diseases that are killing so many Americans needlessly.
Well, it is true. And I've been, you know, it's funny how one of the things I love to do is fry onions because that smell somehow it just makes you want to eat something. So there are so many things. If you fry onions and you add, as you said, beans and all of these other things, wild rice, it's amazing what wonderful meals you can make. And also they're so inexpensive. I find, you know, I'm saving so much money on food because, as you say, the staples aren't expensive, and they're something that are easy and fun to cook.
Let me give you the simple six-ingredient recipe that you should be eating every week. You take onions, celery, carrots, and you might cut them up small. You soak them in olive oil. You add a little bit of rice, and then a quarter and a cup of beans, lentil beans, for 20 minutes, and you have longevity elixir that costs you 50 cents a serving, and you can eat off of that pot for a week. And it's shockingly delicious, that simple recipe.
It's filling, and it's just that it's very satisfying food, I think. There's something about that food that maybe it just seems natural for us to eat it because I find it very satisfying.
Americans are obsessed with protein, and we think that we have to turn to steak or pork chop or chicken for protein, but that's the wrong place to look. The simple act of combining a grain and a bean gives you a whole protein, which is to say all 19 essential amino acids. So in practice, if you like a Latin American food, you take black beans and a corn tortilla, very common to people from Mexico. If you're Italian, the pasta and fagioli, we have recipe from Sardinia. It's a beans with pasta and a beautiful sauce. Okinawa, if you take a tofu, people don't think, maybe think tofu doesn't taste that good, but what they don't realize is, first of all, tofu has got better protein than meat does, and it takes on whatever flavor of what you cook it with. And then just beans and rice. So simple, so easy. The southern part of the United States are very familiar with taking a black-eyed pea and rice and adding a nice sauce to it. For pennies a serving, you can be getting all the protein you need, and more importantly, the fiber, which is something the standard American diet is completely absent of.
Well, you know, as I said, the food suggestions in the book are wonderful. The photographs are wonderful. Tell us just a little bit about some of the trips that you took. What were the most adventurous? Did you ever run into any danger? Did you ever get lost? Tell us a little bit about that. Take my listeners on a little tour because they need something to think about, I can tell you right now, because they're not traveling anywhere.
Yeah. Well, so to do it right, before I bought my first ticket, I hired demographers to go through census data because you want to make sure you can verify that these places are living the longest. So It took a year and a half just going through census data to find the longest lived population. And then I took about 40 trips to Okinawa, Sardinia, and in Korea, in Costa Rica. And, you know, most of the time I hire a fixer, somebody who speaks the language and knows the culture. And I travel with a photographer. And we first talk to the scientists. So in every one of these blue zones, there's geneticists and people who specialize in demography and epidemiology. So interview the scientists first. And you want to get kind of a recipe of what the whole population has done over the last 100 years to yield a population that was living a long time. And then I go and I look for 100-year-olds, centenarians, who live the emblematic lifestyle of the whole population. So most people who do a story like this will go find a 100-year-old and ask the 100-year-old what they've done most of their life. And they'll tell you anything from, you know, smoking cigars to eating egg yolks. That's the wrong way to go about it. The right way to go about it is you find out what the whole culture has done for the last 100 years, and that takes a lot of research, a lot of time. I spent 15 years before you start talking to individuals, and what you want to find is an individual that mirrors the culture, and then by telling that individual story, you can tell the story of the bigger science picture. And that's the way I did it in Blue Zones and the cover story I wrote for National Geographic and for the New York Times.
Now, do eggs play any part in Blue Zone or not?
I'm sorry?
Do eggs play any part in the diet of people who are in the Blue Zone?
Not much. Not much. On average, they're eating about 3 eggs a week, and we don't know if they live a long time because they're eating a little bit of egg or in spite of it. It's much clearer. You know, I wrote about this in January's National Geographic, The Science of Living to 100. The big revelation we're finding now is happening at the end of our digestive system. We have a virtual organ down there called the microbiome. It weighs about 7 pounds, consists of about 100 trillion bacteria. And those bacteria do a lot of the work for us, the digestive work for us, and they make something called short-chain fatty acids, which leach into our bloodstream, and they help control inflammation. They help fine-tune our immune system, so when things like the COVID-19 virus comes along, they know what to do with it. They even can control our mood, give us a sunnier mood. The only thing that these 100 trillion bacteria eat is fiber. And the standard American diet has no fiber. Pizzas, hamburgers, french fries, soda, zero fiber. And when those bacteria get starved of fiber, they start eating away at your intestinal walls. Your immune system goes out of whack. You start experiencing inflammation. The recipes in the Blue Zone kitchen are all very high fiber, and there's a whole rainforest of fibers. We're not just talking about some kind of Metamucil or something you add to a drink, but we're talking about the different strains of fiber that come from the beans and the onions and the cauliflower and the rice and garlic. So this whole kind of rainforest of fibers just fertilize our microbiome, and it pays us back with a much healthier system, a stronger immune system, and a sunnier mood.
Now, do you grow your own vegetables? Are you in a condition that you can actually grow vegetables?
In the summer, I spend some of my summertime in Minnesota, and I have a garden that produces tomatoes, and my dad's a big gardener, so I'm a beneficiary of all of his bounty. He grows everything.
Oh, that's nice, because my mother was, she loved to grow these kind of vegetables, beans, and of course, We grew a lot of pumpkin, and pumpkin soup is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Magical. It's one of the arguably the healthiest diet in the history of the world was invented by the Mesoamericans, the Maya and the pre-Maya, and it consisted of just three ingredients: beans, corn, which they made their tortillas out of it, and calabaza, which is pumpkin.
I know. I grew up in northern Michigan, and it was always one of my mother's favorite things that, you know, the fall would come and the pumpkins would come. And most people in our little village, they would just, you know, use the pumpkins for Halloween. But my mother just loved to make pumpkin soup. It was our go-to in the winter, in the fall, soup, you know. And she would can it. It was just wonderful. And so I was really pleased when I saw in your book you had a recipe there for a pumpkin soup, because there's nothing. I think it's one of the, again, talking about comfort foods, it is a comfort food.
Yeah, without the meat and the saturated fat and the hormones, so important. During the pandemic, of course, is a terrible, tragic time for a lot of people, but when there's crisis, there's opportunity. And there's two big opportunities for both of us right now. Number one is to relearn the art of cooking like our grandparents did. You eat at home, you're going to be much healthier than you do if you eat out all the time. And number two, now's the time to start thinking about planting a garden. A great longevity activity for any family, any individual. It keeps you moving every you plant a garden, you got to water it and weed it and so forth. So it nudges you into movement every day, lowers stress hormones. And at the end of the summer, you emerge with these healthy organic vegetables, which since you planted them, presumably you like them. So you're more likely to eat them and live longer because of it.
And if you ever find yourself in a lockdown again, it's nice to be able to go out to the backyard and pick up your own vegetables and not go to the store, right?
Oh, by the way, you can socially distance by going to your backyard and planting a garden right now.
Exactly. Everybody should do it. I live in a condo, but after this, I decided that I'm going to get one of those large window boxes so I can at least have, you know, grow my own things here, so I can have something, because I don't trust and I can't go out to the supermarkets. But it would be so nice. I think those are going to be big sellers after this is all over. Everybody, at least you have something. You have your fresh spices. I know my girlfriend has one, and she loves it, and she's always been sharing the chives and the sage and the other good stuff. And now I wish I had one.
In Ikaria, one of our Greek islands, blue zones, they suffer dementia about a fifth the rate we do in the United States. Every day of their lives, they're eating either oregano, basil, rosemary, sage, or mint.
Wow.
Every one of those herbs could easily be grown in a window-like garden.
Yeah, those hydroponic gardens, they are wonderful. I think they are. They're talking about people making money off of the stock market. I think I'm going to invest in any company that makes hydroponics, because I think everybody is going to want to have one in the house. I would really, really, as I said, I got a lot of the staples, the beans, the rice, but I don't have fresh vegetables, you know, fresh herbs, and it would be so nice to be able to pick them up. So, you know, I think that you've done a great job with the book. It's a beautiful book, and I hope that people will get it. It's called The Blue Zones Kitchen, and it has 100 recipes to live to 100. And, you know, I I really, really highly recommend this book. And it's just, you know, you're a fascinating person. And I think you had a lucky job here working with National Geo, because they are so, just wonderful people. And there's so many stories. And you have a website that you want people to go to?
Yes, bluezones.com.
Okay, bluezones.com. Everybody, get it, get inspired. And I just want to, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I will continue to tell people about this wonderful book by Dan Buettner, and I'm pronouncing it right this time. And Dan, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you, Joy, but I am extending a telephonic hug to both you and your whole audience, so.
Okay, thank you. We all need it. We all need to stay together and be strong.
I love you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow, he is nice. You know, if you are looking for a gift, I don't know when we can start ordering books. And right now, when I tried to order something on Amazon, there was a delay. They're saying April 23rd for delivery. But once this is over and you can order books, this is a really great gift. It's a beautiful book, just beautiful. But the recipes and the stories are fascinating. And I think a lot of people will realize now after this horrific thing that's happened to us is that the ones who survive this virus are the ones who are healthier in the most cases. People with underlying problems like diabetes and some of these other problems, just it's rougher on their bodies. And in many cases, diabetes and some of these other health problems can be avoided simply by living a more healthy lifestyle. And Dan Buettner's book, I think, will be an inspiration. I love it. It's called Blue Zones Kitchen. And I hope that you'll get it because, you know, we need ideas. And boy, am I going to get that hydroponic garden. Oh, I wish I could have a tomato. I don't know why I've got this absolute craving for a tomato. And I can't go out there. So make sure that you always remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book is going to be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So just start today. It's easy, actually, to do 5 pages a day. You can do it without a problem. And say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything you do for me. And be safe, Ed, because we all want to get back into the studio again. So take care. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.